Arthur Herman, thanks for coming on with me.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I know that you're a senior fellow at Hudson Institute, and you're a historian. We haven't crossed paths, but we will
Tell
now.
Now. I think we will.
We'll have a good.
I've been looking forward to it a lot.
I've seen some of the things that you have been for and all, and I find that we agree on some things. We may not agree on some things.
These things happen.
That's right. Well, tell me that you've had experience with fracking, and it's had lots of publicity, but one, finish the question, that on fracking and how it's affected the United States and even the economies of the OPEC countries.
Well, it's been an amazing revolution, and we have to use that term, revolution. When you think about the way in which this old technique that was used for conventional oil drilling for many years, going back to the 1940s, has suddenly revolutionized
but, you
the
know,
industry.
People act like it's a new.
I know, they do, they do, and it's not. It's not at all. But the drawing out of extracting of oil, and particularly natural gas from source rock, that's been the big breakthrough that's given us this
that's
amazing
right.
energy abundance that we now enjoy. I mean, right now we are now on the way to passing Saudi Arabia as the biggest world's biggest oil producer. They're talking about possibly producing 18 million barrels of oil a day by 2040. We're already poised now, we're already the world's largest natural gas producer. And thanks to the way in which you can exploit source rock, we're looking at extractable reserves now that are going to be equal to that of both Iran and Russia put together. It's an incredible revolution that's come. And it's already had its effect around the world. It's had its effect on the world oil price. It's become a factor in what has really pushed that oil price down around the globe. And as you point out too, it's something that's really scaring the countries in OPEC. Because now for the first time, they thought they had us over a barrel, literally.
Well, they did have.
Ever since the 1970s.
Yeah, you go back 70s. Yeah. 73 was the embargo.
Yep.
Soon thereafter, real quick, that our government came to the conclusion that our oil would have to come from the Mideast.
That's right.
But it was a good conclusion at that point. We didn't know about shale gas, shale oil. And so now we move the Fifth Fleet.
Yep. And the other thing, too, of course, is that we began to gear up our whole energy policy around the idea that oil and natural gas were going to get scarcer and scarcer, mm-hmm. pricier and pricier. Therefore, well, conservation.
You remember Carter, yep. Fuel Use Act.
That's it. That's the one. And then we had the ban on oil exports, crude oil exports. We had a whole range of... Which we still do have, and this
and
is
those,
one of the hangover.
They pass that stuff, and you can't ever get it off the books.
Isn't it true?
So if they make a mistake, we're stuck with it forever.
For decades.
Yeah.
And now the situation is completely reversed. Now we are a player again in the world energy markets, not just in terms of the price for oil and also, as well as natural gas, but also for the technologies that are going to make it possible to extract them, not just for the United States, not just having inexpensive natural gas that can really fuel our economy.
Now you say inexpensive. It truly is inexpensive. You know, when you look at 6-to-1 on parity with oil, and you have $100 oil, you got $16 natural gas. Have you ever seen $16 natural gas? Never. And so here you are at 50, and you have $8 natural gas, and natural gas $2.75. I don't think I'll live long enough to see $8 natural gas.
I hope not. For your sake, I hope for your sake as well as ours too. I think you're going to live a long time, and we're going to see this natural gas revolution really take off. We're just in the beginning stages of it, I think. And if you look at the history of U.S. economy, world economy, and the way in which new technologies and innovation can change everything and spur economic growth and intellectual growth around the world, that's what's happening right now, and that's what we need to get our policy makers' minds around it and really sort out a really coherent and sensible energy policy that recognizes this new fundamental
and
reality.
You know, it doesn't have to be complicated.
It doesn't have to be at all.
You know, my pitch on that Pickens plan was get on your own resources.
That's right.
And there isn't anybody in the room that ever jumped up and said, that's a bad idea.
Yeah, exactly. Because we're actually moving beyond just the goal of energy independence. We also have to think about energy security, because the countries with whom we have, who have been recently dominating the world energy markets, are ones with whom we do not necessarily have good relations and do not necessarily mean us well. And so one of the things that I'm pushing for here in Washington is for policymakers and for our presidential candidates to really think about our natural gas, this superabundance that we're now going to enjoy and going to have for decades, to think about this not just as cheap fuel, which it is, and it's a key driver of American economy, but also think about it as a national strategic asset that we can use to enhance America's leadership in the world here, that we can really have leverage now on those kinds of governments like Russia, Iran, and the sheikhs, and the in the Persian Gulf, and also and Venezuela, through this kind of energy power.
We're no longer dependent on them.
No, we certainly are.
We can announce in the morning, we don't need any more oil from the Mideast.
And you know what else too? I think we're going to have an enormous leverage with other countries who have been up until now highly dependent upon Middle East oil and OPEC oil. And I'm thinking primarily about China.
Well, what you're going to do is you're going to stabilize the world on energy.
Right.
Where before you had OPEC, they drove the train.
You know, people have been worried most recently now about Iran, the lifting of sanctions and their being able to get back online and to sell their oil and natural gas, and that this is going to have a disruptive effect on oil and gas prices. I think it's really important to realize that now America has become, I won't say a swing producer.
Oh, they have.
You think they do?
They just stuck us with it.
I know.
The Saudis said they are not going to reduce production when this downturn came.
It's true.
They jumped in and said, we're not going to reduce production. We're going to maintain market share. And what they left out the last sentence, you are the one is a swing producer. And so we had to reduce production.
Well, isn't that nice? I mean, it's good to have the Saudis identify us as such. Whether that's technically true, I can't say. But it is true that now we have the ability to really stabilize oil and gas prices through our enhanced production. And look, Iran, when it comes online, don't forget, Iran's energy industry is government-owned, it's government-controlled. When they and the other members of OPEC decide they're going to try and raise the prices to squeeze more revenue out of the oil and gas that they sell, they're free to do it. What drives them crazy is that we're doing it through the free market. And this, I think, is one of the key ingredients, and I know you agree, is that you've got to harness the free market. That's where the big change. That's the big change that's come with fracking. It's all been driven by free market, private sector initiatives.
And okay, Arthur.
And that'll do
but if you want to bring diesel prices down, you have to introduce another fuel.
Yes, you do. I totally agree.
And that's natural gas.
And that's natural gas. Natural gas's impact on transportation, we're just getting started with that, but its impact, I think, can be huge. It can be beneficial to economy. It's cleaner. It's cleaner than petroleum, gasoline, and diesel. And we're also going to see that this is a situation in which our natural gas resources now can revolutionize our transportation network. Almost as much as it's going to revolutionize our industrial base.
You don't have to go to your car. You only use 500 gallons of fuel a year.
That's right.
You want to go to is heavy duty trucks.
Yep.
Because they're using 20, 30, 40,000 gallons a year.
And what you might also find, though, is that by deriving ethanol, methanol from natural gas, you can have a transportation fuel that works for light-duty vehicles as
sure
well.
Sure you can.
The technologies are in place. The technologies are there. It's just a question of unleashing the market.
We have been in a position where all we want to do is be sure we had our oil.
That's right.
From the Mideast. We got up to 7.8 million barrels a day. We're now down to, from OPEC. From Saudi Arabia, we were 1.2 is all we get from there. Yeah. I still don't get it, that we don't get it, that we're there with the Fifth Fleet. in the Persian Gulf, and we shepherd tankers through the Straits of Hormuz for the cartel. We do.
Yeah, that's
right. They don't pay us anything.
Nope.
And so we see that you can get, and I had somebody tell me.
Nor do their customers, including China.
Pardon me?
Nor do their customers, including China.
No, they just sit there and let us.
Take advantage.
Yeah. And so 17 million barrels a day coming through there, we get less than 10% of it protected for China and Europe. And I said something to them at the Pentagon. I said, why don't you guys charge them for? And they said, well, you can charge them. They won't pay us.
I think it's a great idea.
But I'd love to say we're moving the Fifth Fleet.
Wouldn't that be marvelous?
Yeah.
And that we're also in the process, too. We're also, through the technologies now that for shale extraction, that those are technologies that now we can not only use to enhance our economic growth, but the economic growth of other countries as well.
Sure.
Because source rock is everywhere.
And if you got an oil field, it had to have source rock.
And so China has enormous natural gas reserves.
But what's missing in China, of course,
yeah,
is the infrastructure.
That, totally.
Yeah. And they got a long way to go.
They got a long way to go.
But, you know, Arthur, there's one thing different about America than any other country in the world. The minerals are owned privately.
That's right. And that's a huge advantage in terms of this free market, private sector explosion of energy production that's come with it.
So people that are watching us today, they already like what we're saying. So they're sitting close, listening, but that the minerals ownership I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about,
of course,
is that below the surface. So if you buy a farm in Poland, UK, Australia, Canada, you get the surface only.
That's right.
You don't get anything below the surface. The United States is the only country where you buy the farm and you get everything below the surface. And that, you said, well, why does that make oil and gas happen? Why do you drill more wells? Today, there have been over 5 million wells drilled in the world, and over half of them in the United States.
That's right.
Because of that ownership below the surface.
An overwhelming number of those on private lands.
Yeah,
or state and county lands, too, in which they've leased it out.
But the private land is
the legal foundation is those property rights.
That's exactly. It's a private ownership.
Now, look, in Europe and China, of course, that doesn't exist, especially in China. But still, those technologies can be used as a way to make those countries, particularly in Europe, energy independent, natural gas independent. And nothing scares someone like Vladimir Putin more than the shale revolution.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because that's going to take away, if this takes off in Europe the way it has in the United States, even by a fraction, then forget about it. Russia's whip hand over the economies of Europe, especially Eastern Europe, is gone.
You remember when I ran those ads?
Yeah,
and I
sure
said,
do.
Don't let the United States be in a spot of Europe in their relationship with Russia for natural gas. You remember that?
Yeah.
And I said, when Russia has a political issue and they need to use natural gas as a tool, I said, for instance, here, and we had a globe and it showed all the lights on. I said, Russia just cuts off Europe's gas, and what do they have? They're in the dark. And we cut off the lights, and the globe, of course, went off. Okay, we ran that. I get a call from a guy. He wants to come and see me. And my secretary said, well, who are you with? And he said, well, I'm with Gazprom.
Yeah, what did he have to say?
And so I said, well, have him come. I said, I don't know anybody from Gazprom. He came and he sat down and he said, Mr. Pickens, I'm here at the request of Moscow. And I'm based in Houston. I'm with Gazprom. And he said, we would like for you to quit running those ads where you cut off the lights in Europe.
That's right.
Yeah. And I said, oh my gosh. I said, my ads went around the world. And he said, they asked me to do that. And he said, that's my whole mission today. And he said, I've asked you. I said, you have anything else to say? He said, no, thank you for your time. Just you got up and left.
You were telling too much truth.
Yeah.
And dictatorships can't deal with truth. And they can't deal with the truth with the real energy situation for Europe would be if American fracking technologies were to come there and really open up the reserves, the substantial reserves that they have. And Ukraine is a perfect example of
that. The one thing about the fracking, people say, well, you're going to get real cheap oil. It doesn't work that way. It's expensive.
It is.
And so you're going to be looking at higher and higher priced oil is what's going to happen.
And you're also going to have a situation in which there's going to be enormous resistance to it because it's gotten a bad name in the environmentalist community.
It's a great way for them to raise money.
Tremendous, tremendous, and they're exploiting it to the hilt.
They do, but they can't give any evidence of damage.
Not one.
They talk about how it destroys the aquifers, and I said, okay, give me an example. Show me where it was. Well, it was in Pennsylvania. I said, well, Pennsylvania doesn't have aquifers. They have perch water. And I said that, and they have nothing to.
Nothing to back it. And the other one now, of course, is that it causes earthquakes. The earthquakes. And you know what? If you go to talk to scientists, to geologists, they'll say, sure, there's always going to be a certain amount of seismic activity. When you're working below the surface of the earth, this is what happens. It's a long call from an earthquake.
Yeah, and also you have the earth's crust is continually moving.
Yep.
And we used to measure that activity from St. Louis. It measured Oklahoma and North Texas from a Richter device in St. Louis. Today, there are over 400 those in Oklahoma and Texas. And do you have more activity? No, you have more.
More sensors.
Yes.
Exactly. Makes it, and that can detect a lot more of even minuscule movements in the Earth's crust.
Sure.
Or in other disturbances
at lower strata. About two on a Richter.
Well,
that's not an earthquake.
No. So what you've got is you've got fear-mongering by those who are threatened by the whole fracking revolution, both at home and also abroad. And I'm not the only one who's argued this. You talk to the Secretary General of NATO, Anders Rasmussen, and the evidence is very clear that Putin and the Russians have been supporting and subsidizing the green movement there and its opposition to fracking.
They've been where?
In Europe.
They've been doing it here, too.
I think you could easily conclude that. You go to RT, right, the big state-owned media machine that Putin has got broadcasting in the United States, and any kind of story that's negative about fracking or any kind of protest against it gets headlined on the TV and on the radio in the process here. They're scared. OPEC is scared. America has its energy destiny back in its hands again. It has the opportunity now to
really
take leadership in the energy field around the world here. We're poised on a major revolution. You were prescient enough to understand that a few years ago. Now I think everybody is aware of what's taking place, and what we need to do is to get together and make and spell out
energy
policy. Well, I
spent over $100 million telling that story. Do you think I got my money's worth?
Well, I think you were said you were a little too ahead of the curve then. Now's the time when you can really sort of say, look, here's someone, T. Boone Pickens, who understood what America's energy future was going to look like, who understood the implications of the natural gas revolution, who understood that something like the Strategic Petroleum Reserve was really an out-of-date concept as a way of thinking about
we gotta get how on we use that. That. I got a question for you. But you know what my legacy will be?
What's that?
Over Boone's life, he had good direction. Over Boone's life, his timing was questionable.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's an important legacy to have.
Okay, let's talk about the SPR.
Sure. It is, I think, and you said it very well very recently, it's time to rethink Strategic Petroleum Reserve. If you're not going to abolish it altogether, and I'll tell you, the forces in the Hill against abolishing the SPR are pretty much insuperable.
You mean about abolishing?
Yeah, about abolishing it.
And that, who is it?
there's a lot of senators, there's a lot of congressmen.
They want to keep it.
They want to keep it.
Oh, yeah. And, they don't understand energy. No. So what you do is cut it in half.
Yeah, exactly. Or you think about other kinds of uses for it. Did you know now that, in fact, with the new, as the Senate begins the process of putting together its new budget, that one of the things they're going to do is they're going to raise $8 billion by selling oil out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Mm-hmm. So it's not sacrosanct. I mean, they all talk about it as if, oh, the SPR, it's a nation's lifeline if anything happens to our energy production.
In taking out, you
should. But they're happy to help themselves when they want to.
You should spend some money to move heavy-duty trucks to natural gas.
I think that's a very good idea. Why not use it for energy?
You can do that without costing you anything. That's an easy pay for.
That's right. And the technology is there, and it's ready to go. I think probably what's going to happen is that you're going to see, Strategic Petroleum Reserve involves many components. There's a gasoline component. There's a crude oil component. There's a natural gas liquids component. What you may see is a sort of a breaking down of that in ways. I don't think you're going to get rid of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve altogether. I think people will still hang on to it like a little security blanket.
Yep.
You know, the memory of what that was like in the 70s is still very deep.
But you know, the most oil we've ever taken out of there?
Well, remind me how much it was.
18 million barrels.
18 million barrels.
And that was in Katrina.
That's right. That's true. And you know what? And that was a perfect example of where it was, you had a reservoir being used for purposes other than what it was designed, but that were, in a sense, you realize that we need to have a different set of structures, a different kind of a framework by which to deal with our energy production. Strategic Petroleum Reserve is an idea whose time is long past.
Okay, next item. Keystone Pipeline.
Keystone Pipeline. This is one, you know, historians are going to scratch their heads over this and why the United States and why in particular the Obama administration has so dug in its heels on blocking
trying to give you something.
Exactly. And also, too, the other thing that is interesting about it, too, is that if the complaint about it is environmental degradation that comes from pipelines, if that's the big worry that concerns all this, what about the damage, including the loss of human life caused by shipping all that oil by rail instead? This is a crazy policy. Everybody recognizes it. I've had conversations with senators, both past and present, on it, who don't understand, from Obama's own party, who don't understand why he's taken the position that he has, except for a fear of the environmentalists. This is going to be one, I think, that's going to be a top priority for a new president. Complete the Keystone Pipeline. Not just for our energy security issues, but also because this is important support for our Canadian neighbors. Our neighbors are allies.
Canadians are friends of ours.
They're friends of ours. Their pilots are risking their lives in the fight against ISIS right now. The least we can do is to complete the pipeline and help breathe new life into the Canadian oil industry.
What you should do, Arthur, you've seen me talk about this before, is you ought to put together a North American Energy Alliance.
I think it's one of the great ideas that comes out
of
your plan.
Well, you would fix the energy security for North America like that.
And you know, up until very recently, the one unwilling partner in that would have been Mexico, but that's now changed. Pemex is in the process of deregulating, of inviting now private investment.
Yeah, but
it's getting started.
They had a horrific decline in production year over year, down by
10%. They're taking a heavy hit.
Oh,
heavy hit from the drop in oil.
And what we should do is help them technically and not take equity. They're hung up on that 1938, their constitution, where there'll never be outside ownership of oil in
Talk Mexico. About outdated ideas.
Yeah, but go ahead and help them develop. And they pay us back through what we increase in their oil.
And also increase our natural gas exports to Mexico.
Sure.
They're feeling a new industrial renaissance.
We're getting
industrial renaissance for Mexico.
4 billion cubic feet of gas a day. And when you start to export gas, LNG out of Lake Charles next year is going to be 1 billion a day. And we have 4 going to Mexico.
And you know something else? A North American energy block that you're proposing is also the way in which you deal with the illegal immigration problem.
Yeah, right.
You deal with that right away. Because the more you promote economic development in Mexico,
There's a job.
Incentive to go across the border.
Yeah, you know, my friend in West Texas told me, drug contractor,
what did
he said,
you?
Pickens, don't get Mexico started because they'll take all the roughnecks out of West Texas back to Mexico.
Now, that would be a pity.
Yeah.
But I think we're a long way away from having to worry about that.
Well, we've had a good discussion.
It's been a fascinating one.
If they leave it up to you and I would fix it.
I think we could get a pretty good start on it. There's no doubt about that.
Thanks, Arthur.
It's an enormous pleasure. Great to see you.
Good. Let's do it again sometime.
Absolutely.